Support for MPB comes from the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson. What Became of Dr. Smith by artist Noah Satterstrom is on view now through September 22, 2024. Learn more at msmuseumart.org.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting. It's made possible in part by contributions from podcast listeners. Please consider making a contribution by going to the Donate Now tab at mpbonline.org. Thanks for your financial support.
Hello, welcome to the Arts Hour. I'm Larry Morrissey with the Arts Commission. This is the Arts Commission's weekly turn at the microphone here at MPB. Each week we talk to a different artist, musician, creative person, and get a little bit more information about who they are, what they do in their creative life. Our guest today is Schaefer Yana. She's a singer-songwriter from Mississippi. Schaefer, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
So you've been in Mississippi most of your life, right? You're not a native of Mississippi.
Correct. Yes, I was born in Missouri, raised in Batesville, went to school in Delta State, and have just kind of bopped around ever since then.
So you've done your time. You can claim Mississippi.
I do claim Mississippi when people ask where I'm from. I just blanket statement say I'm from Mississippi because I've just lived all over the state.
That's right. So Schaefer, you're a singer-songwriter. You've worked as a recording engineer. We'll get into some of that, some of your training and your work in that as well. But maybe let's just kind of you're out on the road. You play throughout Mississippi now, and you've got a lot of recent releases out where you find stuff now, right? Bandcamp, where else?
All those over kind of the thing. Internet.
Yes. You're all over, so you can find yourself. And we'll hit those later for people. But maybe let's just go back to your early years in Batesville, growing up, and kind of like music in your house, music in your community. What kind of drew you to it as an art form when you were younger?
I actually think my connection with music started before I even moved to Mississippi. But even that can be probably traced back to Mississippi in itself, because my mom is from Batesville, and she grew up singing in the church, and so did my grandmother. So there's the three of us. And so living in Missouri growing up, mom was always singing, and I was singing with her and singing without her. And then moving to Mississippi, it's not just singing anymore. It's like feeling the inspiration of Mississippi itself. You know, it's so special. The environment, the people, the culture, and fostering that in the Delta when I went to Delta State too was even more special, because that place is just, I mean, that's just like a breeding ground for magic and music and art and creativity. So
you sang in church, you kind of had that church background. What about kind of like pop music, secular music? When did that kind of hit your brain?
Well, the pop music definitely came when I was still under 10 in Missouri. You know, I was very into like Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera, Shania Twain, and Backstreet Boys, you know, very pop. Like I grew up in the late 90s, early 2000s. So like that pop stuff was my stuff. And then growing up in the church too, I have these two very, very opposite music styles that I'm listening to and singing along with and performing. And then I think really when I started finding my own lane within all of that was when my sister was in middle school, and she was, you know, she had an iPod and she's adding songs to her iPod and letting me listen to her iPod, and she's burning CDs for the car. She's listening to things like Fall Out Boy and the All American Rejects and Eminem, and like just these far off trajectories from mainstream pop and hymns, basically. So I think if I really were to dissect all of those things within my music, I can hear the pop influences, I can hear the church influences, and I can hear these like heavier alternative influences as well. And they really all just came from where I was living and who was around me.
So you sang in church. When did you kind of say, I want to try to perform, or what were the situations that kind of led to that?
You know, I can't really pinpoint that. I think I've always just loved singing, and I always wanted to be the one on the stage singing. And I didn't necessarily always want to be a songwriter. That was more a means to sing. But I think just always.
Like, so in high school, did you have a band or were you in choir or what were your very initial kind of performer experiences?
Well, I went to a private school. It was very small and there was no funding for band or choir or any musical program. So we didn't have any musical program at school, but once a year. And my school was K-3 through 12th grade. And I went there from fourth to graduation, graduated with 25 people. Very small. But every year, Miss Bonnie was like the drama teacher, and she would do a Christmas program every year. It was this huge thing, and everybody in the school was in it because every class had their, like, part in it. So it would just start with K-3, and they would do a little thing, a song or whatever, and K-4 and all the way up. And it kind of just became a pattern that I would always sing a song within that, either alone or with other singers, or there was some kids that played guitar, so like it was just always a thing that I would sing in this Christmas program, and it like was this thing that I looked forward to every year, and I was always trying to decide what song I wanted to do next year because Miss Bonnie would let me pick my song, which made me feel very special, you know. And but I mean, I had been performing in church before that, even doing solos and such, and I even did like local theater growing up.
Oh, okay.
I did one play. I made it sound like I did it a lot, but I did The Wizard of Oz at the Panola Playhouse in Sardis.
Oh, okay, great.
I was the coroner of Munchkin Land.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I had my own song and everything.
The like, we report to you that the Wicked Witch is dead?
Yes.
One, oh, great.
That was, yeah. Yes, because I had a very convincing Munchkin voice, and I can still do it. I'm not going to do it right
okay,
now.
Okay, I wasn't going to ask.
But, yeah, that was really fun, and just some ensemble stuff as well. Uh-huh. So, but, yes, I've always really loved performing and, like, being on a stage.
So, in terms of, like... So you went off to Delta State for college. Were you like, I'm going to be a music major at that point? Or was that something you found when you got there?
I did not know what I was going to do in college. I didn't want to go. And then when I did decide I would go, because I didn't actually decide. My mother told me I had to go. I thought I wanted to go to Millsaps, but I didn't know why. I just loved Millsaps. I toured it, fell in love with it, but still didn't know what I was going to do there. And then... in the fall every year, Delta State has something called pig picking. And it's kind of like a homecoming kind of thing, you know, tailgating and music and the sorts before a football game. And my mom got me up that day and was just like, we're going to go to Delta State for pig picking. We're just going to go. I know you don't want to go there, but we're just going to go look. So begrudgingly, I went, you know, the whole 45-minute drive to, I guess it's longer than that, but... You know, close enough. It was too close to home is why I didn't want to go there.
Oh, yeah, right.
But we went and they had like a, not an orientation, but a prospective student kind of situation going on. And they split you off into the different majors. I was looking through the majors and I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I got in the I don't know category. And they took us around to some of the buildings and then they took us to this one building that used to be a gym and, like, activities center. There's, like, a gun range in there, a huge basketball court, and but it's all been renovated, and it's now the DMI, the Delta Music Institute. So these spaces have been renovated into being, like, world-class studios for recording, and there's classrooms, and, you know, they've even got so much going on there. More stuff going on there now than they did when I was there, but I fell in love when I saw it because I was just like, oh, I don't have to be like a choir musician, because that was never my thing anyway. I can't read music, but when I saw that there was this like space where I can learn about the industry and learn about the tools that are a part of the industry, and there's like a very realistic way that you can be an artist to make a living. I mean, I was just sold. Like, I just forgot about Millsaps. And went to Delta State and fell in love with it and the Delta and just everything about that area, everybody there.
You're listening to the Arts Hour. Our guest today is Shafer Yana, and we're talking about her work as a singer-songwriter and kind of some of her background. Now, for folks, the Delta Music Institute at Delta State is a very specific thing. For people that aren't familiar with it, maybe just give us a kind of a brief summary of what they do and how it works.
Sure. So the Delta Music Institute, the DMI, is a school within Delta State as a whole. It's its own thing within it. It's completely separate from the music department. It doesn't focus on music theory or performance necessarily. It's more based on the entertainment industry and jobs that exist within that. So that's not necessarily, you know, musician type jobs, but can be like managers or just like more business type people too, but with a focus on the entertainment industry. They do have really great studios there though. So when I went, I learned about the business, but I also did all of the classes for the audio engineering track. And so I learned how to be an engineer as well.
Yeah. And the thing that I've learned over the years is that, and maybe part of DMI is that it kind of fosters this a community of musicians as well. And so that Cleveland kind of has its own unique little bubble of musical creativity. And I was hoping you could speak to that during your time there.
Absolutely. And I do think I was there at a very special time because it was before music got very like internetized, I'll say, and like before TikTok. And so it was very full of kids like me that just like wanted to find their space within the music business. And you know, tons of them were musicians and they're gigging and they're making bands with each other and they're writing songs and we're playing shows. And if we can't get a gig at the bar, then we're doing it in somebody's house. A lot of my first shows were house shows. We had a very specific community, I guess, that was able to support that. And it was very special. And unfortunately, I don't think they even have anything like that going on right now down there. But it was such a magical time when I was there to have all of my friends be going after the same thing that I'm going after. And we're all able to like inspire each other and witness each other's progress and support it and rise up together in that way.
This is Larry Morrissey. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The show is broadcast on MPB's statewide radio network on Sundays at 5 p.m. For access to all our past shows, please subscribe to the Arts Hour on your favorite podcasting app.
Our goal at Everyday Tech is to keep your technology not only working, but working for you. I'm the host, Abram Naney, and you can join me and my friends Wednesday mornings at 10 on MPB Think Radio, or search Everyday Tech on your favorite podcasting app, or download the MPB Public Media app.
We're back on the Arts Hour. I'm Larry Morrissey, and our guest today is Shafer Yana. She's a singer-songwriter from Mississippi. And we were talking about Cleveland, Mississippi, Delta State, and the Delta Music Institute. So did you, at that point, when you were kind of in that community, that's where you're kind of learning guitar and instruments and stuff? Or did you go there? Is that, and when were you first like a band person and then you kind of said, oh, I'm a singer-songwriter? How did that kind of find itself?
Well, I think I already knew I was a singer-songwriter. I wasn't interested in having a band at the time. I wrote my first song when I was in the third grade and then got really more heavy-handed with it in high school. And in middle school, I taught myself how to play piano very roughly, and was relearning guitar in high school because I had tried to learn before, and it was sometimes you don't get it the first time. And so by the time I got to college, I had already been writing songs and I'd already been playing instruments and singing, and I knew that that was me already. And then part of the curriculum is being in one of the live bands in the DMI. I don't think everyone has to do it, but it is something that you can do. And there were three or four bands, and they would hire them out for events as well. But, you know, not only was it just for performing, but you learn how to be in a band and, like, everything it takes to be in that. Barry Bays was our instructor, and he has been a touring musician for forever, and so he just knew what to tell us about everything. So that was kind of my place to be in a band for a while, and I could still be my own little singer-songwriter by myself. And then I got to this point where I was ready to try to record some of my songs and make a record, and so I got my friend Casey to kind of help me figure out what I needed to do, and then we brought in our friend Starlin, and he produced it, and he kind of put a band together for me to record these songs. And that's kind of when I moved into the band sphere a little bit more, was when the first record happened. And even now I still play with Starlin and Taylor, the drummer from that record. And we've brought in Ben Yarbrough as well, who actually works at the DMI now. He went through the program and then now works there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, it seems like a lot of people that are now kind of out working in various levels in music kind of came out of that program. And just so we mentioned a few, can you think of some others maybe that people have seen? Are there other people out like touring or playing in around Mississippi that,
yes,
that were either before you or after you kind of coming out of DMI?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is Reed Smith, because we're in Jackson and this is his hometown. He goes by Rod Smoth of the time. Starlin has a band called Starlin. He was in a band called the Tallahatchies for a while. That was also with Taylor White. And Taylor still plays drums with him as well. And let's see, my friend Casey, who I mentioned, she's got several projects. She lives up in Memphis now doing all of those. There's Rooney Salem is her solo project, and then she's got a band, Late Night Cardigan, and she's got another band, Scott's House, that was, you know, they were more when we were in college, but I think every now and then they still do stuff. Who else? Ryan Kaiser went to the DMI for a little bit. He's Yacht Club, and I think he switched schools to Southern Miss, but he was in the DMI for a little bit, and
so y'all are out there.
We're out, yeah. Out there, we're all doing around, it. Yeah.
That's cool to see that kind of filter out across the state.
Yeah, I know that we stretch all the way up to like New York and LA so.
Some people out there.
All around. Cool. Nashville.
And I did see on your social media that you went back, last year as a teacher or an instructor for their summer camp?
Yeah, that was really fun. They asked me to teach the songwriting class for their summer camp, because they have kind of three different tracts that you can do in the summer school. So they've got the songwriting, there's band, and then there's recording. So you pick which lane that you want to go down, and then at the end of the week, it all comes together for one big show. And so they asked me to teach the songwriting class, and that was really special. I had three students that were in my group, and we just wrote songs and talked about writing songs and talked about songs that we loved, and it was just really fun. It was a great way for me, too, to, like, recheck in with my own songwriting process and like learn these new methods or like take in these new ideas. And I think getting to talk to people who had a lot less experience, it allowed me to just like really talk about anything, because they hadn't heard a lot of that before. So I could just like really go into my process or other people's processes and just really think about the whole craft of songwriting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then at the end we performed all the songs.
Oh,
so
wow.
That was fun.
That's really neat. It must have been neat just to kind of see maybe somewhat a younger version of yourself, these young people kind of coming, thinking about this as a thing,
absolutely,
being able to kind of guide them a little bit. It's really
absolutely
neat.
And a lot of those students end up going to the DMI after. So.
Sure. Great recruitment tool for them as well.
Yes, for sure.
So what's kind of like, what do you see as the kind of the next big step kind of going out of college? You have your first record, right? It's coming out kind of in that. And did you kind of move into kind of putting yourself out there as a solo performer at that point or what?
Well, so the record actually came out when I was still in college.
Okay.
I was either a sophomore or a junior by the time it came out. And so I still had a couple years in school. And at that point, I was very much trying to do the music thing, or at least as much of it as I could. And when I graduated, I moved to Memphis and kind of had to put music on a hold because, you know, you enter the real world and you have to pay your bills. And so I worked in a kitchen and it was hard. And finally... Well, actually, I was still working in a kitchen when I went on kind of my first big tour, and I wasn't playing music or anything. I just was on tour with the Squirrel Nut Zippers as their merch girl.
Oh, okay.
They had asked me to go because I knew Jimbo already because, oh, I guess I forgot to mention that I had to do an internship for school, of course, and I did that at a recording studio. Met Jimbo Mathis there. Sang on a bunch of stuff for him there, and then he asked me to be the merch girl on tour, and I'm like, of course, yes, get me out of this kitchen, take me on the road, let's go. So that was kind of my first experience in the real traveling, touring world of music. I'd worked in this studio for however long for my internship and then worked there a little bit after, and then when I moved to Memphis, I just kind of stopped doing music for a while. And so coming back to it in a touring aspect was really fun to see a different side of it, and I just fell in love with being on the road. That's just
what are some of the early, what, you know, that's a kind of a make or break thing. People say, oh, I'm never going to do this again, or this is the life for me. So what were some of your kind of memories of like what really kind of drew you to it after that experience?
I think it was just the freedom of it. You are in a new place every day, you're meeting new people all the time, and there's just something about, for me, I love the feeling of sitting in an airport waiting on a plane, because I don't feel like I have to do anything else, I can just like sit, and that is like very relaxing to me. And so getting to do like that all day long, waiting for the plane, sitting in the van, waiting for the show to start, like all of these moments where I can just like sit and not do anything because I'm waiting for the next thing is like one of my, I don't know, I think there is a word for this, but I cannot think of it right now. And there is a lot of that on tour. And I think,
sure.
I think a lot of people don't like that feeling.
That's the part that they all say they hate.
That's the thing that a lot of people don't like. Yeah. And people don't like to be in hotel rooms every night and yada yada. And I love being in a hotel room every night. I don't know. I actually lived in a hotel as a kid for a couple months, and so maybe I'm like drawn to that in some weird way, but you know, it's nice. You don't have to like clean the bathroom every week. You just move on to the next one.
Yeah, that's right. You just leave the bed and you go on. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm such a weirdo. I like make the bed before I leave. Like I kind of like pre-clean the hotel room before I leave it.
Yeah. You're listening to the Arts Hour talking to Schaefer Yana today. So you mentioned Jimbo Mathis, who's been on this show many times, and you kind of had an ongoing working with him. So tell me so you started as the merch girl, but then you eventually kind of brought in as a performer, right, into his band or kind of versions of things he was doing?
Yes. So specifically with Jimbo, our work relationship started at the studio where I did my internship and then worked for a number of years. He produced some records there, and he did his own records there, and he would call me in to sing background vocals on all of these projects, and that led to the merch girl thing, and then that kind of also just led into he wanted me to start singing in his like Jimbo Mathis band, not just his Squirrel Nut Zippers band, but his like rock and roll country blues kind of thing. So I started out doing background vocals in the touring version of that band when COVID was kind of, when things were opening back up, when music was coming back after COVID.
Yeah.
And I would just sing, and I had a little tambourine, and I would just do my thing. And then eventually he was kind of just like, you play guitar. Like, why are you not playing guitar in the band? And I was like, well, I don't know. So then I started playing guitar in the band and singing. And then he was writing songs for me to sing in the band just so that he could have a little break. And so that went on for a few years of touring really heavily in that band. And we're not touring in style. We're touring in a very old Dodge van. No seat belts, sleeping in hotels and all cramming into one room. Some of us are sleeping on the floor. Like that was like the, in quotes, dream. You know, that's like how people start touring. And so I got that hardcore with that band. And then I was still touring with the Zippers too as their merch girl, because that was just fun to go out there with them. Even though I wasn't doing music, it's just fun to be out there with them. And everyone in that band at this point has become like my family, like my second family, my road family. And so, 2-3 years ago, we were out for the holiday tour, and Cella Blue, the female vocalist, broke her ankles.
Oh, gosh.
One night. Both ankles, stepped off the bus the wrong way and just broke both of her ankles. It was horrible.
Oh.
And she went on for several more shows in a wheelchair. Goodness. And it just kind of became a logistical nightmare trying to get her around all of these venues, especially because they play so many old theaters, you know, and all the stairs. And it was just not, it just wasn't working anymore. And so Jimbo, you know, looks at me and he's like, do you know these songs? And the weird thing about it is, yes, I did know the songs, because before we went on that tour, he asked me to learn them because he felt like something was going to happen.
Wow, he had a premonition.
Jimbo is very hoodoo, magic-y. Something is going on with Jimbo where he is connected to this other plane.
Huh.
And so before we went on tour, he said, you know, I just feel like you should learn these songs, you know, just in case, you know, you may not need to, but... So I learned them, and then lo and behold, she breaks both her ankles, and I have to finish out the tour with them on this holiday run. And
so you're doing Christmas songs or
Christmas songs and Zipper songs, but actually all of the Christmas songs are Zipper songs because they have a Christmas record and they wrote all the songs for it.
It's original music.
Original, yes, and it sounds very classic though. Mm-hmm. So, it was a lot of fun, and so there have been times now where. If the Zippers are going to play like in New Orleans or somewhere nearby, and it just makes more sense for me to do the gig because I'm closer to it, then I'll fill in for that. Or if Cella is busy for a leg of a tour, then I'll do those shows. And I'm just kind of like the spare tire. Like I'm her, what's the word?
Understudy?
Understudy, yes.
Okay, yeah.
So it's been really fun. And I've gotten really into jazz music just through that and jazz vocals. And I've found this whole other part of my voice.
Yeah, it's a totally different style
from
what you do.
It's a whole different thing. Mm-hmm. And I've already kind of collected this like amalgamation of different voices I can do because I sang background vocals in a studio for so long. You just learn how to sing different ways for different styles and with different people and how to make your voice blend. And so it was almost like learning these jazz styles. I didn't even realize I was missing this whole other area that I could use my voice with, and that has been so exciting for me in that regard because I love singing, but also for songwriting because now I'm trying these different styles in my writing and incorporating these new things that I've learned in that as well.
Cool, excellent. This is Larry Morrissey. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The show is broadcast on MPB's statewide radio network on Sundays at 5 p.m. For access to all our past shows, please subscribe to the Arts Hour on your favorite podcasting app.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Dr. Jimmy Stewart, professor of internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. On the original Southern Remedy, we answer questions about all aspects of your health and share some of the latest medical information in the news. You can listen to the show on Wednesdays at 11 on MPB Think Radio, or you can subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy on your preferred podcasting app.
We're back for our final segment of the Arts Hour. I'm Larry Morrissey, and our guest today is Schaefer Yana. Now, we were mentioning Jimbo Mathis in the last segment. Of course, he's like kind of his own person, his own character. He started very young, like yourself, and kind of self-taught and learned his way, and has done this stuff for a long time. Tell me about kind of maybe some lessons or things that you gained from, you know, learned about kind of either songwriting or being on the road from him, just because it seems like it would be such a distinctive experience.
Yeah, Jimbo is definitely one of a kind, and I think I've learned maybe more from him than anyone else about how to be a band leader, a songwriter, a performer, a businessman. Like, you have to be so many things when you're doing music. Unfortunately, it can't just be as easy as you write a song and then you get to play it. And seeing all the different ventures that he pursues in light of his creativity, you know, he's like, he writes plays and he makes marionettes and he does films for that, and he makes these, he calls them ex photos, and they're these like 3D collage art pieces. You know, watching him is so fun because he is, you know, a lot older than me. I call him Uncle Jimbo, but he has the spirit of a child still. And so seeing that in someone that I'm looking up to is like, it feels backwards for him to be inspiring me in that way, to like still have like the childlike viewpoint and still just want to play, because that's what he is doing all the time. He's just playing and he's just following whatever piques his curiosity. And that, I think, has been the biggest thing that I've enjoyed learning from him, is how to just keep following your curiosity. Obviously, he's a great songwriter. Obviously, he's a great band leader and a musician, but it's these other things that I don't think people see quite as much about him that are so special to get to see in person and that close.
Yeah, the last time I talked to him, the thing that struck me is that, you know, he has this persona on stage as kind of this kind of, not a wild man, but, you know, just very eccentric, but he's very serious about what he does, and he's very like determined and focused, and he's moving the ball down the lane and he's doing it all by himself. But it's, people don't know that side of him. I don't think of that kind of, he's just, oh, look at crazy Jimbo, but he
absolutely
is.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he definitely has, it's like, you know, a lot of artists have like their persona that they put out, and like, obviously his performer persona is very, very large, but it's not a persona, like it's not him. Like, that's still mm-hmm. him. He's just kind of able to like separate from that when he's not on stage, and he is, you know, he's reading books all the time. I can't believe how many books he reads, and he's always trying to read very like niche books. He's always talking about, well, I had to get them to special order this one at the library, you know, they just got it in, I'm so excited. And I just wonder how he does everything that he does and the amount of time that we have in a day, but he does it. And if he can do it, I sure hope that means I can do it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So more recently, you've been, the recordings that we've heard on the show come from you recording up in Memphis at Bruce Watson Studio, who's one of the partners in Fat Possum Records, but this is kind of his personal studio and working with his kind of crew of musicians up there. Tell me about that experience working up there.
That was a really great experience. I had already known a lot of them just through already working in a studio and already working with Jimbo, but I think it was kind of after I wrote It's Gonna Take Some Time. They had reached out to me and said that they were interested in possibly recording with me and if I could send some demos. So I sent a bunch of demos. I sent that song, It's Gonna Take Some Time, and The Start of Spring, and they chose a few that they liked, and we just started there, and we recorded four songs with the house band there. So that would have been Will Sexton and Mark Edgar Stewart and Will McCarley, and then Jimbo was there and Bruce, and so they were kind of co-producing, and we recorded these four songs. It was a great experience. It all went really well, and then we started releasing them. We did a music video, and we had talked about possibly recording some more and doing a full album, and I think we just had different ideas about what the album would be, and so we just decided not to do it, and that it was totally fine being just the singles that we did, because those songs came out so beautifully, and I couldn't have done them like that with anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I learned, I'd only ever worked in one studio before that, so my whole scope of what it could be like in a studio opened up, getting to see the way that he has his studio set up and how he uses his gear and instruments and players, and so I just got this whole new perspective of being in a studio, and that has been able to inform me on when I have gone back into the studio now, and I've just done an EP that I'm about to start releasing the singles from. You know, I just have more experience now to like draw from, and I'm really excited about the stuff I've been working on, because I've gotten to produce all this stuff now, and so I've learned from all of these great producers and musicians, and now I'm getting to show what I've learned from that, and I'm really excited to show that.
Yeah. And so of course Bruce Watson, as people know, he was like the house engineer for Fat Possum for many years and recorded all the classics that everybody knows. So what are a couple of things that, you know, that you saw as distinctive, or how he runs the session as an engineer? You're kind of paying attention to that kind of side of it too, I guess.
Right.
As well as just like how you, what are some things that you picked up from that experience?
I really like how efficient he is. He's not trying to get the most perfect take that could ever exist, but he is trying to get the best out of you in that moment. And that's so great, because I can sometimes get trapped in a loophole of trying to fix something and spending way too much time on it. And working in that environment, when everyone just felt good about it, not just like, that's the best thing ever, but just they felt good about it, it was time to move on. And we didn't just like ruminate on that too long or like second guess it or anything. We just said, that was great, let's go to the next, you know? And then as far as like from an engineering standpoint, he already has his sounds, and he just, you know, he's not starting from scratch all the time. And that just comes with time and experience. So that was really cool to see someone use their tools in a way that is like, they don't have to find it, they already know it. So he gets these really, you know, fat vintage sounds, and he's recording in this house, and he has treated the walls and the ceilings and the floors in a way to make it sound really great. So, you know, it's almost like he doesn't have to work that hard to make it sound great, because he's already put in all the work over years and years of doing it. And so he has created such an efficient and beautiful, clean way of capturing a moment, as opposed to a song or a sound or whatever. It's like, it's the moment. Mm-hmm. And it feels so pure when you're in there hearing it back too.
We're talking with Schaefer Yana on the Arts Hour today. So you mentioned an EP. So are you recording that yourself for the new project, or is that something you're working with other people on? Or
I am producing it, but I have enlisted my friend Starlin again to engineer it because he is such a brilliant engineer and he has set up such a wonderful studio in his home. And so we did the EP there, and then we're actually going to go back to Dial Back Sound, which is where I did my first record, and he produced it there. We're going to go back there and work on some more stuff.
Okay.
So it's kind of like round two.
And you see this as something later this year that you will, kind of the timeline of it, if you could guess?
Right. Yeah, I guess I probably shouldn't say that we're for sure going to do it, but we are hoping to do it this year because we've been talking about it, and I think why wait, you know?
And then otherwise, you, I know in the Jackson area, we've been seeing you a lot. So it seems like you're getting out there kind of as a solo performer. What kind of things do you have? What are you hoping to be working on over the next, through the later this year in terms of touring or performing and that kind of thing?
I'm really just kind of focused on releasing new music right now because I did my first record in college, and then I had these three singles that it's almost been like 2 years now, I guess, since those have come out. And I have all these songs that I've been playing out with for some of them for like over 6 years now, and I've never recorded them and put them out. So I'm really just trying to get some of my back catalog out right now. I am going on tour in Texas next month, a solo tour. Never done that before. I'm very excited, very scared, very excited, very scared. And yeah, I just want to get this new music out, and then I want to start focusing on going on tour again in a way that I can take my band, because I've been playing solo for so long that I just miss having them up there with me. It's so much more fun to have a band, and some of the songs don't feel right without them, you know.
Yeah, does it lack some of the power that you want to get across? Well, so for people who want to hear your music, check out some of the stuff you've been doing, tell us where the best places to go to find that are.
Anywhere you stream music, my music is available. Spotify, Apple Music, Bandcamp, SoundCloud, YouTube, it's all there. Just search my name, Schaefer Yana, Schaefer Llana. And yes, it is pronounced Yana. Thank you for getting that right. It's funny. This is a huge thing. When I go on tour, a lot of times the places will have my name backwards.
Llana Schaefer. Oh, yeah.
Even though everywhere I have put my name, it says Schaefer Yana. Everyone turns it around. Doctors, pharmacists.
I guess Yana, it looks like Llana.
It looks like Llana. I get it, but I'm just... I'm saying it on the air. It's yes. Schaefer Yana.
First name Schaefer, last name Yana, two L's. Thanks so much for being on here with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB depends on support from listeners, so if you can, please contribute today at mpbonline.org.
Hi, I'm Ryder Taff, portfolio manager at New Perspectives, a fee-only financial advisory and co-host of Money Talks. Each week, we take your personal finance questions and tell you about a money topic we hope you find helpful. Money Talks can be heard Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on MPB Think Radio. Podcasts can be found on our website, money.mpbonline.org, or on your smart device's podcasting platform.